Early morning, man. I don't like when we have to reschedule.
Okay.
It often means early, early morning for me.
Is that...
Do you like...
That's a bad thing.
Oh, good. Yeah. Evidently, it makes for a solid start to the show, evidently.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, I'll just pour my coffee and then I guess we'll light this candle.
Okay.
That's all you have is K?
Yeah.
It's your golden hour, man. You should be the one with the zingers and the riffs.
This is my bedtime.
All right. Enjoy, everybody. Hello and welcome to episode 436 of the Two Hosers Photo Show. My name is Alan in Tübingen, Germany. With me, as always, is...
Adam in beautiful Vancouver, British Columbia.
All right, man. I heard it is beautiful. Everyone says it's fantastic weather.
Yeah, it's getting warm.
I don't think people care that we talk about the weather, but it does affect photography, so that's why I bring it up. And sure. Our state of mind.
Sure it does.
Yeah. Because it's been winter here.
Oh.
Winter. Remember I told you we were going to get rained out last week? We got rained out, and not that it affected that part of the game, but there was a little hint of snow in the morning.
Nice.
A little May snow. Yeah. So it's been great going to the Freibad to go swimming. And the water's okay. But it's 3 degrees outside, so that's delightful.
Okay, but yeah, you're still going.
I go every day still, but I still it's the getting to and from the pool part because it's a bit of a hike from the locker room to the pool on the freezing cold tile, like the stones. And so, yeah, that's the delightful part.
Are there other people there?
No,
just you.
Well, it's a massive pool, so when I say there's no other people, there's usually three people. Including me. So it's nice. Usually it's me and two guys in neoprenes in the wetsuits.
Nice.
Yeah. So, okay, if I'm being, you know, positive about it, on the bright side, I have a giant 50-meter pool to myself.
Yeah.
So that's a win. That is definitely a win. Okay, so, hey, happy about the weather. But baseball, still have not started our baseball season. Which is kind of weird.
But if anyone is looking to get their neoprene swimsuits, where could they get those?
Wait outside the pool till a guy comes out, knock him on the head, run off.
Or
no, oh, right. Silky segue, Adam. Amazon.
Okay. I bet they sell them, yeah.
They do. How do you try on a wetsuit? Have you ever worn a wetsuit?
No, actually, that's not true. I have once.
Yeah.
To go surfing in Tofino. Oh, yeah. Full rental.
Oh, yeah. Surfing in Tofino, you definitely, if only you need one, but only if you're planning on surfing for more than 10 seconds. Because it is not warm. I've worn one there, actually. I've worn one. Maybe we wore the same.
Probably.
Yeah. I peed in mine.
Me too.
Okay. We'll check some dates and see who's who went first. Yeah, I was the first guy to pee in that one, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Australia, I wore one. Well, you want to have a list of all the places you've worn
wetsuit.
It's absurd. That's a rabbit hole that no one wants to even go down. But click through our site to help us out. That's what Adam's saying.
Yeah.
What's going on, Adam?
Just more good vibes, good weather, outside time, and yeah. More beautiful weather and outside time to come. We have a baseball tournament this weekend, so
it'll baseball tournaments,
and it's shaping up to be the hottest weekend that we've seen in quite some time. So we're mid to high 20s even being forecasted.
Where's the tournament?
Just in Richmond. So this is just
at home.
Yeah, it's a spring tournament. This is all just the Richmond spring teams.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be nice because it's all the teams we play in are just spring league, but it's kind of a fun tournament and you have to manage pitching well because you have a lot of games in a short time period. So it'll be interesting to see how that works.
Because
the kids have very strict limitations on what amount of pitches they can throw. So we have a 12-man roster, and I'm pretty sure at least 11 out of 12 are going to have to pitch.
Forgetting that, I love the social aspect of an actual tournament.
For sure, yeah.
Because you're kind of all, everyone's kind of, you know, bunkered in, man. Like, you're there. I mean, it's not so much when it's a home tournament, because you can always run home and get your stuff or whatever you need to do. But if you're gone, like, let's say if you're in, like, say, Chilliwack in a tournament, you know, you might not stay the night, but you're there for the whole day, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And so that you're there, you're hanging with people, you're swapping war stories, pretending like it's a really hard ship to be out there. And really just sneaking vodka into your coffee mug. That's what the parents are doing.
And I'm not sure whether or not I'm going to, you know, take my camera out or not, but I probably will at some point. We play some evening games. It'll depend on which park we play in. We have we have games Friday and Saturday evening, but I think both of them aren't in the nice park, so we'll see.
Right.
I plan on taking the camera out a little bit. We'll see.
For the photogenic parks, that's nice to have that option.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nice.
What about you?
Show-wise, couple of housekeeping matters with the podcast.
Okay.
Is I got a message, I forget where it came from. Like one of the venues, one of the platforms. Might have been Instagram. But I forget who it was. One of our listeners was remarking, and I should have wrote this down, but who it was. I think it was David Wilkinson. I think it was David Wilkinson on Instagram. That's my guess. And if I'm wrong, my apologies. But he basically was kind of somewhat chiding us a couple of weeks ago for not having that show on the Monday.
Okay.
Remember a couple of weeks ago we were 2 days late.
Yeah.
And we caught a little bit of good natured ribbing and a little bit of, and actually it was very nice because there seemed to be some legit disappointment that the show was not ready on Monday.
Yeah, my favorite thing in life is disappointing others.
That's not isn't that not better than disappointing behavior that disappoints nobody?
Sure. Yeah.
Like if a tree falls in the forest, does anybody laugh? Like that's not going to happen, right?
Very
so,
true.
So there was some disappointment, and most people understood that the situation, but I commented, and he basically said, he fired back. He said, and his comment was something to the nature of, "Yeah, no worries. I don't demand my money back or something like that. You get what you pay for."
Mm-hmm.
Meaning, hey, it's a free show. Quit your whining. We'll just do it when we do it.
Right.
Which was nice. It was a nice way of letting us off the hook. However, I assure you that I don't want to speak for Adam, but I think I can. Adam and I don't feel that way. We don't feel like, it's a free show. We'll just do it whenever we feel like. We actually go out of our way because we value your time and your dedication, or dedication is not the right word, but we value you, the listener, as if it is money. We treat everything that we do, and that's kind of a trait that I think Adam and I have, is that we treat everything we do with value.
Sure.
We don't just throw it away and go, we'll get to it. I believe that's a very good indicator in life. So that's all. Let's let you know that that's not how we think about the show. We don't think it's just some kind of throwaway thing that, even though that the dynamics are, it's not you pay $5 an episode, therefore you expect this. We operate like you are paying. With that in mind, who wants to pay? No. And also one more note. Last week's show, which was on time, by the way, no one seems to mention. I didn't get a ton of messages saying, "Hey, right on time! Good job, guys!
Way to go! Way to turn out another gem!"
Yeah, well, not even that. Just the on time part would have been great. Oh. Monday morning, you were there. You never hear that,
right? Just when you're not.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, I mean, I build tons of cabinets. Everybody calls me a cabinet maker. I forget how the rest of that joke goes. But anyways, so we missed a photo last week.
Okay.
I say we, I mean me, because I'm the one who collects them and presents them to you.
Sure, yeah.
So, I mean, you missed it because I didn't put it there, but I missed it for whatever reason. So Roger Dahlman submitted one, and I feel bad, and so I wanted to bring it up on this week's show.
Okay.
So Roger Dahlman from Killarney, not the Killarney in Vancouver. I'm guessing it's the actual Irish one.
Okay.
The one near Muckross Abbey in County Kerry.
I'm looking at it.
Yes. So there you go. This is, what was the challenge? Outside. This is outside.
It is, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we go ahead and retroactively critique this one.
Okay. Yeah, I don't really have any big criticism. It's kind of looks like a nice green outside moment. Certainly looks Irish.
Yeah.
And I like the horse and carriage. I like what's going on here.
It doesn't make me not want to go to Ireland.
No. It looks to me like, I don't know, this is probably shot with some kind of wide angle, I'm guessing, like a 28 to 70 or something along those lines. Maybe, yeah, I'm not blown away by it, but I do like it.
Mm-hmm. Yes. There you go. Okay. Roger, are we square now?
Yeah, we're good.
We're good. All right. Reminder, monthly challenge this month is for May is Evening Sky. Technically also outside, probably. Doesn't have to be, but I'm guessing the bulk of them are going to be outside.
Okay.
I'm doing mine inside now, just for saying that. No, I'm not doing that. Hashtag that Two Hosers Monthly Challenge or hashtag Hey Hosers on the Instagram, and we'll check that out. Okay. Unless you're Roger, then we'll do like a week later.
Yeah, there's a Roger delay. Maybe that's his last name. It's not Dahlman.
It could be Roger Dahlman. I think he's the lead singer of the Birds. Yeah. Cool.
Great.
Did you shoot anything interesting this week?
Did I shoot anything interesting? I don't think so. I think the last time I took a photo was I kind of OD'd on all the baseball photos from a couple of games last week. So yeah, camera stayed in.
Did you get through them all?
I did, yeah, and I uploaded them for people on our team and that, so I did get through. There's two games worth and too many photos, but I did get through it all, and so, yeah, no, the camera stayed in the bag. It was actually my birthday last weekend, and okay. did not even do, like, I think my wife took a photo, like, of myself and the kids blowing out the candles on her iPhone, so that's where we're at now for family birthday photo moments. I'm not a big birthday person myself, like in terms of celebrating my own birthday. I'm good with celebrating the kids' birthdays, but right. I just like to take advantage of a few hours where I might get left alone to watch sports on television. That's kind of what my dream is like, and I believe I got that on my birthday, so I was happy. But there was also a bunch of baseball and stuff going on last weekend, so I did get some time in front of the TV for some sports. And one picture on my wife's iPhone, which I never saw. So
she has a newer iPhone, right?
She had, no, not really, because she has a work one, and I think they have like this. I'm going to say the 6S. I don't think they're on the 7s yet at their district.
All right.
Yeah,
I was going to suggest that if she has a somewhat newer one, then she should load up the Lightroom, the free version. There, she can snap raw photos on that, which comes in handy every now and then on the iPhone.
Yeah, I'm going to get in the very, very soon, hopefully tomorrow, an iPhone 7. Like, I'm behind the time, so I'm just buying a refurbished one. So I'm going to get one of those. And then I'm actually, I mean, I've done a lot of reading about, you know, the camera and whatnot, and it seems pretty decent in that one. And also, I'm going to use it for some video. So look for that upcoming. I think it's going to be comparable, maybe better on the video end of things than the RX100 video. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited about that, because it's also it's also with you too. I don't have to, it's always going to be with me. So
it is surprising how good it is. I mean, I don't know if it's better or worse, the same, probably the same-ish, maybe better than the SE that I have.
Yeah, it's an upgrade from the SE. Yeah.
Yeah. So, sorry.
But not like a massive upgrade. But it came out with a few upgrades. The camera being one of them. Yeah.
Yes, and so but with the SE, the video I shot, I was blown away.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, for what it is, it wasn't like, holy cow, is this an Arri Alexa? What the hell? Or Arri Alexa, I guess. Right. We should probably call that. But it's really awesome. And then having them, once you get that and you pop the Lightroom on there, having the ability to shoot RAW is awesome, which I don't do all the time. Like when you still have your phone app that you just snap all your, you know, throwaway snapshots with.
Yeah.
That are JPEG. But then if you want to take something that, you know, hey, I might actually use this for something, you can quickly pop it, snap it in a DNG file, and then just completely run with it in Lightroom later. And it's pretty awesome to have.
Okay, I know I'm looking forward to it. So maybe I'll test run it with a little bit of baseball this weekend. Just some video and a couple of photos.
There you go. Yeah. We're all looking forward to that.
Yeah.
I shot pretty much nothing. Again, the weather is a major part of it, except for I missed a photo. There's a photo that I wish I had taken. Like I said, last Saturday, we got rained out. Like, it was horrible and weather. And so I went swimming instead because it was like 2 degrees and this kind of this terrible, almost freezing rain, this little misty rain. And when I got to the pool, it was empty. Nobody was there. And there was this amazing mist all across the big Freibad. Like, the Freibad means outside pool. The outdoor pool.
You could have just said that.
Well, outdoor pool is longer than it's one of the few times that the German word's shorter.
Okay.
The outdoor swimming pool.
It's not shorter when you have to say the German and then explain what it is in English.
Dans la piscine. That was the French version.
Okay, great.
Anyway, so there's this amazing mist and these cool clouds in behind, and I just wished I had my, because it's something I've never seen before, because usually it's sunny and full of people. And so as one of those times I wish I had brought my iPhone in with me. I did not, so there you go. You know, in your mind's eye, it was a great photo.
Great, okay, I'm glad we know about it now.
Photo challenge. This week, I threw out the 85 because it's one of those things that sometimes you forget that you have it, and then you start shooting with it again and wonder why you weren't doing it all along. So let's have a look at, you want to go first or second?
I'll go first.
All right, so here is Moody Kid.
Jack at the batting, I shouldn't say the batting cage, but at the nearby park, we went and did some batting practice after school today because he's got the tournament coming up this weekend. Usually, we have baseball on Thursday nights, but we didn't have it. They had a cage practice yesterday, so we had the free night. And I specifically thought, oh, let's go do some hitting. I don't really want him to throw, but I'll throw to him, and he can just work on some hitting. So we did that, and then I said at the end, I'm going to snap a photo of you. And he was not very patient, but I did have something in mind. So I did bring a couple of lights and light stands. So just two speed lights. And this was probably taken at about, I'm going to say about 5:30. So sun's still relatively high overhead in the sky. So I'm using the sun to backlight him and top light his helmet and his shoulders. So that's all natural light. And then I'm using the speed lights with orange gels on them. I think one's got a half CTO and one's got a full CTO. And they're pretty close to him because I'm shooting in high-speed sync. So I am shooting in high-speed sync with bare flash and then, you know, having to overpower the sun so the it's not totally blown out in behind him.
Wait, you have two off-camera flashes?
Yeah, so you'll see in his eyes, the catch lights, there's two. They're very much on the same axis.
Oh, okay.
So, but they're separated by like a foot, which is why if you look closely in the catch lights, there's two separate catch lights on that same side. Mm-hmm. So that's because of the two flashes. And then, you know, shot through the fence because I kind of wanted that effect of those shadows from the fence on his face. And then shot in tungsten white balance because I was using the flashes and I wanted to be able to see on the LCD what I was going to get. Cause I had this visual in mind, very blue and orange kind of contrast. And then, yeah, and then there it is. Pretty simple shot. I did it in probably four different compositions, but when I was shooting with the 85, and shoot it as I backed up and tried to include more of him in the frame, I found that, that on the shots that I took, probably three of them just were just slightly soft on his eye. And I don't know if it's cause I'm focusing through the fence or whatnot. So I opted to go for this one. Unfortunately, his shirt got cropped. It actually says hit the cage. So it was meant to go with the fence here, but, you can just know that that's the case. His shirt says hit the cage.
Take that, Nicolas Cage.
Yeah. So yeah, exactly. So this is your old trick, the orange speed lights with the tungsten lighting, taken at midday, kind of looks more like night. And
a little bit.
Yeah, I like the effect. If I shot the sky, like some of the photos, the ones that I didn't like, the focus wasn't sharp enough on his eyes, I shot from a lower angle and you get the blue, like really dark kind of blue night-like sky. And it looks pretty cool. Fun little trick to play around with for anybody who's looking to make the night at day photo.
Yeah, the day for night.
Day for night, sure.
Yeah.
Or is it day for night?
It's day for night. You're taking your day and making it night.
Okay.
Making it look like night.
Day for night.
Day for night.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, we're on board.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah,
there's even a movie called that, called By Truffaut.
Okay.
So, there you go.
So what do you think? What do you like or not like?
Well, it's a good point. I think I would have liked the sky shot better. Like this is fine. This is in the right. You're on the green. Just you got a long putt to make.
Okay,
is what I think.
Okay.
There's just something off about it. It doesn't look like night. It's not dark enough in the background. It needs to go another stop, I think, to trick my eye into thinking it's night, and then have that light. I couldn't tell what it was because you did light it with the orange. I thought, yeah, it doesn't look like you're going blue here, but the background is blue, but there's not enough separation, and maybe the white balance is off. Maybe it should be a little bit closer to like 4,000 instead of, like you said, tungsten, like 3,200, 3,400 probably.
Yeah.
So if you ramped it up and it get a little bit more yellowy, orangey on the face, which obviously you lose a little bit of blue in the background, but it would be enough. It doesn't look like anything I see in nature.
No, but I wasn't going for that either. Mm-hmm. I was going for cool looking.
That okay then? Yes. Then his icy glare is definitely cool.
Yeah, like and that's kind of too. Like I found that I didn't like I like the white balance here just because to me it looked cool there. But yeah, this is not supposed to be. Day for night. It sort of ends up looking a bit like it's night based on the time of day. It's not, it doesn't look anything like this, and the blue light is not there. It's very warm what the actual light is, but I just like it's cool. And there's something here in terms of a not to look realistic, but just to look cool and light through fences. I just like on portraits. It's just one of those things I never do, but I really like it. And I spent most of my time just figuring out where I wanted the shadows to go, where I wanted his eyes to go in the frame. That was really all I was kind of paying attention to. And then, you know, making sure that the light was not too blown out from the sun relative to the light I was putting out from the flashes. So again, this was a 2-minute ordeal. So I think there's something here. I agree with you. I have to probably workshop this a little bit, but I like the effect.
There's it's good effect, and I'll tell you, it's something very, very specific that is bumping me. And so here's the deal: is that this lighting would not exist. You've already said that wasn't the plan. That's fine. But here's what's screwing me up: is that if these shadows were to come across from the fence onto your sun, it would be from the setting sun. It wouldn't be from the stadium lights.
Okay.
Right? And so they would appear different. First of all, there wouldn't be the double shadow. It would probably be the light source obviously much further away, so it'll be a harder shadow. It'll be probably a more golden light instead of the blue in the background. It'll be like an overall golden wash because With the sun setting, that's going to create those shadows. The stadium lights are up above the stadium and usually over top. Like they are technically behind the fence, but they're hanging over top of the light. So they of the park, so they would not make these shadows. And that's very specific. I'm guessing most people don't think about that, but in my head, my head can't let that go.
Okay,
that's what's bumping me.
That's fair enough. None of that stuff was a thought in my mind at all.
No. No, nor would it have been mine until after, and I went, okay, yeah. No, but moving on, like, if you were to make this a actual, like, fake sunset photo, then I would not know if it's sunset or not. You'd fake me right out.
Okay.
All right. So here's mine. It's not a fake sunset. This is an actual evening shot in the, this represents the 13 seconds that we had sunshine in the last few days. I went out and made sure we were driving home last night, me and the kids, and I said, oh, Alex, sunshine, hurry up, get out of the car, I'll go grab the camera and snap a quick, I don't care if you got stuff on your shirt, you know, like a something dirty, I could have photoshopped now that I'm seeing it, but I was like, get out there. So I quickly ran out and grabbed this photo and then ran back and grabbed the lawnmower and cut the grass because I knew I had a small window till the rain came again. And I was right. But I like the sky and all the light that was happening, and so that was the impetus for this.
Yeah, no, I like it. Looks good.
Totally fine. That's the thing. The thing about the 85 is that this, to you and I, this is an 8-second snapshot.
Right.
You know, and the cool thing is I busted off because the sun was kind of low in their eyes and they were squinting. I busted off like 8 quick ones on what do you rapid fire on burst mode, because I knew, okay, one of them, they'll both have their eyes open for one of them,
right?
And that's it. So not much else to say here, just that was it. The 85 really makes your pictures look good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like so this one, and then I actually shot another one just to quickly illustrate why I love the 85 so much. So this was shot last night at just great light. A couple days earlier, I ahead of time, I had shot a photo of my daughter, and that's her in the blue hoodie, and I thought, okay, I'll snap one with the 85 again. I love it, and I thought this was actually a really good photo. However, unremarkable.
Mm-hmm.
Being that, and now this, take this in the spirit in which it is intended, listeners. We kind of shoot a lot of these photos when you have the 85 millimeter lens and shoot with it a lot, you tend to get a lot of these shots, which are very nice looking photos, but again, you're flooding the market with them, which is a good thing. You should do that. Okay. However, in order to illustrate the difference, because I was talking to a friend of mine a while ago, and I was recommending he get a 50 mil. He only has the kit lens for his Sony. A7 III, yeah. Whatever it is. I was explaining, hey man, you need to get a 50 mil 1.4. They're not too expensive, or 1.8 or whatever it was. I think it's the 1.8. I said, it's a couple $100. You'll love it. And he said, well, what's the difference? He's not super well versed in photography, but he says, what's the difference between, can I just put the 24-70 or whatever, not whatever zoom lens he has, can I just set it to 50 mil? The answer is yeah, but should you?
No.
So I snapped pretty much the exact same shot on what I thought was 85 mil on two different lenses just to illustrate the difference. So I set the 24-105, which is an f4. So the 85 mil of my daughter is shot at f2. And then the 24-105 is an f4 lens. So I shot it at F4,
right,
and set it to what I thought was 85 mil. I was way off at 84 millimeters on the zoom,
yeah,
which I found out later in the EXIF data. And so there's pretty much the same shot. Coloring is a little bit different, but different lens, et cetera, et cetera. Which one you like better?
85.
Hands down. And then again, I shot it with the 70-200 at, I guess, at what, the focal length, and actually got 84 millimeters. Weird.
Yeah, and just for the listeners who aren't looking at the photos, I mean, the main difference that, you know, isn't in the foreground, it's in the background. Like, just the bokeh from the 85 is just so much more pleasing, so much softer, so much more out of focus than, you know, 84 millimeters on your 24 to 105. The bokeh in the background is just not nearly as nice, not even close to as nice.
If you saw, I mean, she's not smiling as much because I think she was done. I took the 85 mil one first and then snapped the other two, and I think she had enough. And so her face isn't beaming quite as much or whatever. However, if you just saw that one first with a little smile on her face, you'd be okay with it. You think, oh, okay, that's fine.
Good. It's pretty good.
Yeah, yeah, hey, background's blurry, like I like it, until you see the one with the actual 85 and go, oh, yeah, okay, that's different.
Mm-hmm.
So the answer is yes, pick up a prime lens for this reason.
Yeah, agreed.
I do like those other ones, though. I do like those lenses, but not for this.
Not for this, I agree.
No. Okay. Cool Sky, I made some notes. No, those are not important. Topic this week. We checked in with, I was wondering, you were wondering too, hey, what's Don Komarechka up to?
Mm-hmm.
I haven't talked to him in a couple months. And turns out, so I got in touch with him. I said, hey, man, you want to be on the show this week, and I want to hear what's going on. He says, what do you want to talk about? And I said, well, what are you up to? And then he just read me the phone book. Just a massive list of these amazing things he's doing. And I thought, all right, well, I feel like a loser now. And here I am complaining about the weather at the pool, and he's, you know, inventing some sort of fluorescent macro photography for a Will Smith movie.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, that's cool.
So that's kind of cooler than me whining. Oh, did I just give away? Spoiler alert.
Wait. Don't undersell what? The cool mist you saw at the pool.
I didn't photograph it, though, did I?
No, but you saw it.
So it exists in the ether. Yeah, so it's the same.
Yeah, it's a tie.
It's the same as my work being featured on a Netflix show. That's the same.
It's the tie.
Yeah. So anyways, so if you don't know Don, I'm sure you know Don if you listen to our show. He has his own show as well, Photo Geek Weekly, which I've been on a couple times. And so I spoke to him this week, and without further ado, I think I say that every time we have a guest interview.
Yeah.
I should.
Thank you, dear.
Did you know that bidding adieu and much further adieu, two separate adieus? Fun fact.
Good to know.
Yeah. I learned that from a documentary that Don's producing. Mm-hmm. All right. Without further aplomb, here's my interview with Don Komarechka. Don, what's going on with you?
Oh, not too much. Spring is in the air. We have a mating pair of mallard ducks in our backyard pond, which my daughter, who's now 3 years old, thinks is the greatest thing in the universe.
Right.
And so, you know, having fun with family and the wonderful spring weather. Tons of projects on the go. Some of them are more personal projects, which I enjoy. I'm writing another book, which I'm pretty happy about, and exploring all sorts of the unseen world of photography.
So, you're about to write more books than I have read.
Well, you have a copy, I believe, of my first book on snowflakes called Sky Crystals.
I've shown it around with pride, too, because my next-door neighbor, her daughter, I don't remember the whole story, but she works with snow stuff or some science stuff in Montreal.
Oh, cool.
And I said, well, I know the snowflake guy.
I just got back from Montreal. I was speaking at the Professional Photographers of Canada convention or conference, whatever they want to call it, over there. Panasonic, one of my sponsors, paid for me to go and do two wonderful presentations, and I think it was pretty well received.
Okay, so let's do one thing at a time. Well, you have many, many things that... Like, when I got in touch with you, I said, you know, hey, Don, what should we talk about? Well, you said, what should we talk about? And I said, well, you know, what are you up to? That's interesting. And you said, well, everything is the answer. And you did. You came up with a number of different things. So I said, well, let's just check in with Don and see what's going on. So the PPOC, which I didn't know, I did not know. How long has that been around? Has that been around long enough that I should know who they are?
Yes, definitely. Okay.
That's on me then, guys.
Yes. So Professional Photographers of Canada is an organization that, I mean, just as it sounds, it is a body of photographers. They give out accreditations and they have judging for their national salon, and you can win awards and all that stuff. So if you have enough both merit and service points eventually with the organization, you can get a designation all the way up to Master of Photographic Arts. But for me, I I've been a member on and off over the years. I'm not currently, but I will be again. They're more tailored to portrait photographers and wedding photographers, and the majority of professional photography today happens to be sort of around those things. So it was fun for me to be in front of an audience of professional photographers. It's not my camera club audience that's hobbyists and amateurs. These were, you know, pros, you know, my colleagues and peers. And so the pressure was on to create an interesting presentation that people found engaging.
So how many people were you speaking in front of?
I didn't count. The first one was an early riser presentation, which was at like 8 in the morning. And so that one did not fill up the room. But the second one was standing room only. So I was pretty pretty happy with the turnout. And the questions were great, too, and very pointed and very specific, which I love. You know, a lot of things about the business of photography, which is sort of what those talks were about, how you can take niches in the photographic space and create something interesting as a result, or a career out of all of these little obscure pieces.
Right, and then, well, that's interesting because, I mean, I guess I'd say what business has changed more in the last, say, 10 years, but every business, actually. But the landscape of, poor choice of words, the nature of photography as a business has changed so much over the last 10 years that how do you make it? I mean, that's a pointed question, but what specifically did you talk about?
Well, there was one story that I was talking about working on documentary films, and it's one where I was hired to do some work about mosquitoes, and I was going to go to Brock University where they have a lab, and they were going to be shooting close-up video. And they needed me to do some specimen work of getting mosquitoes basically in focus front to back. So that's focus stacking on a pin, but on video. And so I would have to shoot a focus stack of the mosquito and then rotate it 1 degree and do that again. And that's fine. I bought the hardware required to do that. But I was just starting to experiment with some of my ultraviolet fluorescing stuff at the same time. And days prior, I had photographed a cicada that was glowing quite brightly. And so I thought, well, just out of curiosity, what's a mosquito look like? And they loved it. They ended up using it as the title card and the title sequence for the documentary film. Me playing around and just experimenting with this fluorescence phenomenon. It's the only time with a documentary film I didn't have a shot list. They had no idea what I could create, but they just knew the potential was there, and they said, just have that, experiment, create something that you think that we'll love. And and I did. So that was kind of how those niches kind of weave in together. And it's all about finding the right clients, and in a global village, it's not that hard to do.
Right. I mean, what a great time for basically crossover, because I mean, you did not go to film school, I'm guessing.
No. I didn't even go to photography school.
Well, that's true. That's a good point. See, I went the other way. I didn't go to photography school, but I went to film school, sort of. But that's a whole other... I'm not sure I would go to film school anymore. If I was, you know, if I was 21 today.
Right.
I think I'd skip film school.
I think most people do, and that's why most film schools are closing.
Yeah, that's... Well, I guess, I mean, if you can do that, especially in your case, when you can do that sort of crossover, once you have a certain sort of skill set, and then you can then look and take that skill set and apply it elsewhere. But it's not, it sounds like I'm making it sound easier to do than it is. You still have to have some, you know, a little bit of a motor yourself.
Well, so, and my formal education is advertising. So having the skills to market yourself, you're effectively an entrepreneur at that point, right? So you have to treat your business as if you are a small business person that needs to market their product. And the product is your work and your services. And those skills are paramount to my success, I think. And so shout out to my alma mater of Georgian College that taught me how to do that and to do it well. But I mean, you could get that education anywhere in the world. And I think that's very freeing, because now today, as somebody that can create something unique, somebody somewhere in the world is going to have a use for that. But they also taught me how to write. They taught me how to speak. They taught me public speaking skills and how to debate properly. And all of these things are very useful when it comes to, I mean, anything. Like I mentioned, I'm writing a book. So how to educate and inform all comes into the photographic space when you take on projects like that as well.
So when you got your feet wet in photography, what sort of things were you shooting, like, from day one?
Well, my dad gave me a disposable camera when I was 8, and I took pictures of, like, the pavement and clumps of grass, and then I was not allowed to have a camera for some time thereafter. So it was at least a decade after that before I picked up a camera again. But and it was the stuff that I was interested in, nature, right? And landscapes in general, you know, generalizing, it's people, it's the stuff that's around you on an everyday basis. And I think that's true of everybody. You start sort of as a generalist, and then you find things that you might gravitate towards, things that you might have an interest to outside of photography that might be a side passion or hobby for you. And then if you can wrap photography into that and see where that takes you, then you might start to establish a niche fairly quickly.
And so when you first started, you weren't, you know, right out of the gate, you weren't doing macro work.
I didn't have a macro lens. I mean, I thought it was something that I would be interested in at some point.
How did you develop that? How did you even know what macro was? How did you develop that interest? Where was the curiosity? What was your inspiration? How did you get? Because it's not your only thing by any means, but you are the snowflake guy.
Yeah. And so, I mean, when I was young, I loved nature. And, you know, I'd go out on hikes and I'd, you know, I was enterprising enough that I knew wild blueberries had they were growing in my almost backyard, I mean, down my street. And I would pick them and sell them at the local corner store, where a guy buys them in bulk and would sell them in Toronto for a profit. And so here I am as like a 13-year-old kid making money to start buying and experimenting with, you know, mostly video games at that point in my life. But it was a hands-on exploration of the tiny little world. You know, you dig around, you move over a rock, you see what's underneath it. And so my backyard being a forest was something that just taught me to look closely at things. And that carries through into my life today.
Okay, so how did you get specifically into macro? Like, what was your first lens? What'd you do?
First lens was the Canon 100mm macro lens, which also makes a great portrait lens, too, for those that haven't used it. This is their earlier one without the image stabilizer built in. And I found it really challenging, to be honest. It was not an easy subject. Motion blur was one of the biggest challenges. Focus was another. And these things you wouldn't really encounter much when you were photographing larger subjects like a landscape or people. So the first year with that lens was really on and off. I would pick it up, maybe shoot for a day, not really be happy with any of the results, and then it would, you know, languish for a couple of weeks before I would try again. And it only became really valuable to me as a this can go somewhere kind of tool when I bought a ring flash and started to control the light for the subjects. And that, you know, spiraled into something, you know, quite, I guess the word would be creative, where you start to control different elements. You start to build an image by putting certain puzzle pieces together. And when you know that it's going to work, you're much more inclined to go through those extra steps.
And so what made you buy a ring flash? I mean, what made you know a ring flash existed?
Research. I mean, I'm not formally educated in photography, so it's just plugging something into Google and figuring out from that point, okay, well, I'm having these challenges with macro photography, and somebody's going to write an article somewhere, or I'm flipping through a camera catalog looking for a solution to this particular tool. And there's twin light flashes, and I could have went with off-camera flash, but the easiest tool to jump in, a lot of people were saying, was just a ring flash. And I figured, well, you know, let's try this. I made the stupid mistake of going for a brand name ring flash, and the Canon, was it the MR14EX, cost something like $500 or $600. Maybe at the time, the third party sort of aftermarket brands weren't as well established, or they might have not existed. But I've since used the Yongnuo YN14EX, and it is every bit as good at 1/5 the price or less. So, yeah, I mean, sometimes it's the barrier of, I think I have to spend a lot of money to overcome this particular challenge, and then you don't. But you don't realize that there is a much less expensive alternative. So that just came with experimenting and trying to find solutions to the problems I was facing.
I have a few of those cameras and lights in my closet as well, like the stuff that you just needed. I mean, at the time, you needed it. What were you going to do? Yongnuo, probably when you started out doing macro, Yongnuo was not well established, you know, and putting on a quality product. So you kind of did need that brand name flash.
Yeah, and you take it off the camera, you hold it off on angles, and you can start to shape your light. It's a very diffuse light that doesn't go very far. So it's great for creating background separation between your subject. Not the best for everything. And a lot of people will tell you that, you know, there are better tools than a ring flash. But for a light to learn on, and it's the one that I use all the time. Every one of my snowflake photographs, as we discussed, is also shot with that same ring flash. So it gets a fair bit of use still these days.
And so what did you start shooting first? When you first started doing macro, what was your subjects?
Well, I mean, flowers, probably. You know, the static subjects, the low-hanging fruit of the subjects. Because, I mean, they're colorful, and you can try to experiment by putting the lighting on different angles where the subject is going to stay static, and you can sort of immediately see your result. And I've kind of come full circle, because I'm still doing a lot of flower work right now. Earlier today, we just bought service berry, also called a Saskatoon berry bush. It's going to be a small tree, and it's blooming right now. And last night, I had gone around the garden with an ultraviolet flashlight, because some flowers will glow under ultraviolet light. Their pollen will often fluoresce more than the flower, and so you've got these really interesting structures. And so I'm walking around the garden at night with an ultraviolet flash. My neighbors probably think I'm insane. But I saw this one, and I figured, okay, well, let's come back to that in the daylight, because I was tired. And I've got a studio here where it's basically all draped in black. The windows are covered up so that I can create a really dark space. And I just took a little clipping from that and brought it inside. And there was an ant on the twig. And so, okay, well, now I'm getting excited, because maybe I can get an actor to be in the scene. In my experience, ants are not very cooperative actors.
Also, the difficult part with them is the model release.
Yeah, you know, they have a really hard time with that, and just constant debate back and forth. But, you know, finally we ended up, you know, coming to some agreement here, and I got a photo that I'm working on. I was working on right before we started chatting of an ant on this really, I don't know why it's so glowy. Like, it's got this fur on the leaves that are glowing like a yellowish green color, almost as bright as the flowers. And so it's not going to be my favorite of these images. But you don't know what you're going to create until you start to experiment. And that kind of goes back to the whole discussion of, you know, you don't know where you're going to end up if you're exploring niches or macro photography, or you're finding your way, until you take a couple of missteps and you realize, well, that's not the direction that I want to go. Let's figure things out in a slightly different direction and just keep on going.
That's actually fantastic life advice that I give people that they summarily ignore. But you know, like talk with the young guys on my ball team, for example, and they say, you know, like, what do you guys want to do? And they all kind of like for a living, whatever it is, and they don't know. And I said, well, you got to go out and you got to have 5 lousy jobs, like stuff that you really hate to do, and you'll figure out pretty quickly what you don't want to do, you know. And that's kind of how it goes with the photography. I mean, you make way more mistakes than successes, especially early on. But it leads you down some amazing paths. So how do you go from shooting the flowers, and where's the moment where you say, I'm going to shoot snowflakes?
It's a bored day at the office. I realized macro photography was interesting with the 100 millimeter lens and the ring flash, but I just kept wanting to get closer and closer. And so I had purchased, sort of as a Christmas gift to myself, the Canon MPE 65 millimeter macro lens, which is a very interesting beast. It is, of course, it's a fixed focal length lens. It has no focusing mechanism whatsoever. If you want to focus with this lens, you have to physically move the entire camera forward and backward. It has a ring on it, but it's to adjust the magnification. And so it goes from 1:1 magnification, where that 100 millimeter lens would get up to that point. This is where this one starts, and it goes to 5:1. So it's a 5x magnification lens. And I knew I was going to have a slow day at the office after just buying this lens. There was just not a whole lot on the agenda that day. So I brought it to work. And you'd be surprised how interesting just like office supplies are up close. I mean, a push pin and corkboard. Corkboard is an organic material. And so you look at that closely and there's something cool to see, or at least to satisfy my curiosity for a little bit. And this day, it was snowing outside. So I took a step outside, just try to see what the snow actually looks like up close. And it was white on white. It wasn't really that, there was no contrast. So I was digging around just to try and find something that was black or dark or just something of contrast to work with. And earlier, at around Thanksgiving time, I think I had met up with family, and my grandma had knit all of her grandchildren mittens. And it was to keep in your car in case you're stuck on a lonely road in the middle of nowhere and your car breaks down and you need to stay warm. Thank you. Thank you, Grandma. So those were in the car. I listened. I kept them in the car, and I went out, and that black mitten had the contrast, but the fibers of the mitten would lift the snowflake away from the background, giving a softer background and function as an insulator to stop them from melting terribly quickly. So it ended up being the perfect backdrop, and it's actually the same backdrop behind every one of my snowflake photographs is my grandmother's mitten.
Wow. Okay. So, but now you start shooting these and realize that you have this fascination for it, but you also recognize that there is very little of this out there in the world.
Well, especially the way that I was doing it, because I realized that if I got the snowflake on just the right angle, that I would have surface reflections coming off of it. And that was key because, you know, I wasn't the first person to photograph snowflakes. They'd been photographed well over 100 years prior to me discovering them again. But they were always shot with transmitted light, light coming from behind the subject, passing through the subject and into the camera's lens. And so a farmer from Vermont, Wilson Bentley, had originally done this. And in order for him to create a black background, because by the very nature of how you're lighting the subject, the surrounding area of the snowflake would be the same brightness as the snowflake itself. Mm-hmm. So he would cut out the snowflake with a razor blade from the negative to get it to have a black background. And you know, his images, they live on today. They're quite iconic. But I was creating that in camera, having the snowflake on an angle and getting light to bounce from the ring flash off of the surface of the snowflake itself, like glare off of a window. And that required me to do focus stacking and some other complex stuff. And that hadn't been done before, at least not in the same way that I was pursuing it. So I thought, I had something really interesting. And what do you do with that? The marketer in me comes out and says, okay, well, who do I shop this around to? I tried to contact the Canada Post. I tried to contact different magazines, at least three or four of them, the Royal Canadian Mint as well. And one magazine gave me a chance, Outdoor Photography Canada magazine, which unfortunately closed down earlier this year. They said, well, write the article on spec and we'll see if we like it. And I wrote it and rewrote it, and I had people double check it and triple check it. And it was the feature story and the cover shot for that particular issue. And the throwing it all against the wall idea with this one particular niche of a subject. I mean, when I contacted the Royal Canadian Mint the first time, I mean, they liked my images, but they basically said, you know, if you could maybe, you know, sit on this for a little while, we have some designs in the can, and we'll get back to you. Well, 6 months go by or so, and I approached them again. And I did a mock-up this time of how my snowflake would look like on a coin. And they gave me mostly the same response as they had said previously, but they also added, we really want to talk to you about your mock-up skills. And I ended up working for years doing photorealistic illustrations for the Royal Canadian Mint because I was trying to see if they'd be interested in putting my own images on a coin. And long story short, I now have two coins featuring my snowflakes produced by the Mint. And I don't know if they're still available. It was a 2017 and 2018 thing, but you never know where this stuff is going to take you.
Did you buy one for your grandma?
I did. Well, she actually bought one herself. I didn't have a chance give her one as a gift. But no, she's gotten many snowflake-related items from me as gifts over the years.
So this isn't a situation where you just kind of thought, you know what, maybe I like photos, I like taking pictures, I'll have a look around the landscape and see, there's no one doing snowflakes, so I'll get into macro and do snowflakes.
No, you can't just take a 10,000-foot view of things and say, yep, nobody's doing this one, let's go do that. You have to kind of stumble across it organically, and then once mm-hmm. you've kind of found something, you say, well, is anybody else doing this? Because maybe you're looking up to figure out some tips or some tricks to help you do it even better, and you realize that there isn't any because nobody's started to explore this yet, or very few people have. As I've discovered with my work with ultraviolet flashes, I basically had to build the flashes myself in order to get the kind of light that I need to make it work.
So how does one get into even the idea of ultraviolet?
I was dealing with akin to my snowflakes, which was freezing soap bubbles. And those are backlit so that they can kind of glow and they're brighter than their surroundings. But I wanted them to appear like they were their light source themselves, which meant that they would have to fluoresce. And so I looked up some tutorials online. I found somebody that was that had taken apart an old Vivitar, was it like a 285 HB or something? And very convoluted process to take that apart. But hey, there was a tutorial on it. And so I bought one of those and started to experiment with filters to get a nice clean ultraviolet light, because xenon, the gas in all of our camera flash tubes, will emit ultraviolet and infrared and visible light, of course. But you want to stop the ultraviolet light from getting out so that you don't, you know, give your subject a sunburn on the back of their retina. That would not be a good thing. So, mm-hmm. Then you have to just kind of do this modification, to that, and I found the tutorial. It was much harder than I currently use some Young Nuo flashes, which is like a 5-minute job and two screws to figure them out. And I made a fluorescing freezing soap bubble, and that was, I think it won some sort of award from the Royal Photographic Society in the UK. And I later used exactly the same technique except with flashlights and video. And hey, as niche as this is, a video of an ultraviolet fluorescing freezing soap bubble was used in the National Geographic documentary One Strange Rock.
And that's available on Netflix, I just saw.
It is, narrated by Will Smith, of all people.
And so your freezing soap bubble is in that?
Yes. They didn't even know, like, what I gave that to them as, like, bonus footage. It's like, mm-hmm. if you want to use some of these other experiments that I've done through the year outside of your shot list, then, you know, go for it. And, I mean, for a price, of course. But they saw that one and said, this is like magical and mystical. We don't know where we're going to use it, but we're going to find a place for it. It has to be in there. And then I think they were talking about cell membranes, and they used it to represent like a shell forming on top of something, as membranes allow more complex organisms to form. So it found a place. They used it, even though they didn't know they wanted it.
So I'm going to have to watch that now. I don't like to typically learn when I watch television. So for you, I'm going to do that, though.
Oh, why, thank you. I appreciate that.
So now you're writing a book. What is the subject of the book?
So the subject is macro photography in general. You know, I did a book on snowflakes, and this one will include some snowflake material, although it's going to be all seasons. It's going to be how you get started, how to approach certain subjects, how to build narratives into the scene. So composition stuff, all the technical challenges that you encounter, both with your camera and with lighting. And how you can really go down the rabbit hole and explore so many different facets of it. It's going to be kind of sciencey, as a lot of my stuff is, but it's going to be an instructional book for, I mean, how you can explore all of this sort of universe at your feet idea yourself as a photographer or just as a general person that enjoys the world around them.
And what kind of time frame are we looking at with that? When do you expect that to come out?
Well, later this month, I'm going to be doing a crowdfunding campaign for it. So maybe you can mention that on the Two Hosers photo show exactly when that launches. That'd be great. I need to raise, I've been crunching the numbers here, at least $25,000 for the print run. And it's going to be a 350-page hardcover book. And I don't know what I'm going to end up selling it for retail, but it's probably going to be around $60. But the crowdfunding campaign will come in at a lesser price, hoping for a Christmas release so that people would be able to have that wrapped up under the tree in December.
Nice. Now, so what advice would you give to somebody, just anybody starting out, and this doesn't even have to be photography, but I'm guessing that's the bulk of our listeners, probably not getting a lot of polo players listening to our podcast, but... When it comes to exploring something in photography, what advice would you give?
Don't be afraid to fail. I mean, a lot of people get frustrated and they say, well, I'm just no good at this. Enjoy the process. A mistake is not a failure. It's just something that you can learn from. It's a stepping stone towards whatever the next thing is going to be. And so, I mean, I take an approach where I ask, like, what if? You know, what if I try this? And you try it. And do you get the results that you were after? Well, it's helpful not to even want a particular result, but to rather just enjoy whatever the results happen to be, because it'll give you new ideas. And I think there's a lack of new ideas in photography in general. So strive for those, and you get those from your mistakes. And as soon as you can get enough of them together, it's kind of been like a puzzle piece approach. Like, I don't know exactly how flowers and ultraviolet are going to connect together at some point. I'm exploring these things completely independent of one another. But now it's a whole series of work that I've done, both for my own passions and professionally. So you can connect all of these different puzzle pieces, even if you don't know how they're going to fit together when you're exploring them independent of one another.
The advice I give to other people, again, that they summarily dismiss, is there's no such thing as wasted hard work.
So, making a sandcastle at the edge of a beach, I think, is, you know, no matter how hard you work on that, it's just going to fall apart at some point.
Yes, but the knowledge that you gain from that, for whatever little knowledge that you gain from building that sandcastle, will carry you forward when you build your next one, or whatever it is that you build.
And then you will win a sandcastle competition one day. Who knows?
Or you might not, and that's the other thing. Is one of the common little, you know, hang in there sayings that I can't stand. I can't stand this saying, but it's wildly true, especially in your case, is that the journey is the destination.
Yeah, I would argue that a better phrase would be, the harder you work, the luckier you are. Where, you know, going back on that idea of hard work, I mean, the more time that you put into something that you're passionate about, the more unexpected eureka moments you're going to encounter. It's just a matter of how many hours you put into it. And yes, you can work towards specific goals that you set out for yourself. But most of my successes have been, I didn't know it would do that. Let's explore this more. Let's ask more questions and let's figure out where I can take this little surprise and turn it into something.
It's one of my favorite things just in life, is like, that you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
Great.
And when I do workshops here, just to put a pin in this idea, I've got one coming up this weekend on water droplet refraction photography. And I get a lot of people that come into these workshops and they don't know what they don't know. It's just... They're a clean slate, and they expect it to be something that is some coveted, very tricky knowledge that they might not be able to do after the workshop. But if they just keep at it, they'll get better and better over time. It's a great attitude to have. But once you see how those pieces fit together, it's like, wow, it's like a magic trick. It's like, you know how the magic trick goes, and you can repeat it and you can amaze your children or whatever, and they can't figure it out. But as soon as you show somebody behind the scenes exactly how it happens, they could repeat the process in, you know, just 10 minutes of practicing and away you go. So I think that we as photographers in general always have to just have that open mind and don't do the same thing repeatedly. Always just find some different way to approach the same thing, and you'll spark creativity every step of the way.
Now, is that workshop this weekend sold out?
I think there might be one or two extra spots available if anybody wants to travel to Barrie, Ontario.
Oh, so hang on. This will be coming out Monday, so I think this will be passed.
That doesn't work, yeah. But I do have other workshops. The exact same one I run like a dozen times a year. So there's one in June and there's one in August. So
and this is in Barrie?
It is, yeah. It's $149 for 3 hours in my studio. It's a lot of fun.
Okay, and so where can people find information about that?
You can find that at doncom.ca, doncom.ca/workshops for all the stuff that I have going on.
That's the hub for everything Doncom.
Exactly, yeah. So if you go there, you'll find all my social media links. You want to see the latest antics and results of those what-if questions, you can follow me on Instagram or Facebook or everywhere that I am online. And all of my upcoming workshops are there as well.
All right. I urge everyone listening to go check that out. And if you can get out to Barrie, definitely go participate in one of his workshops.
Oh, and I'm going to be in Iceland later this year, too. That'll be fun. You want to tag along with me to Iceland? That's second half of October.
All right. Check that out. All right, Don, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Alan.
And we're back. I also say that every time.
Yeah. Photo geek.
Yes, and writing a book. Like I said, no flies on Don.
That's awesome.
Check him out at doncom.ca. And once his book is ready, he showed me the covers. I don't know if he talked about it in the interview or not, that he was going to ask me or whatever. So he showed me the three potential covers, asked my opinion. And then when I gave a very, very specific opinion with reasons, he rejected it.
Awesome.
So I picked the runner-up, apparently.
Okay.
We'll see how many photos sell or how many books sell. It's going to be a lot, actually, I'll be honest. But I just feel that the one I picked, I had good reason for.
Okay, was it a picture of me?
Yeah. in a weird tangential way, it could have been. There's a connection.
Okay.
But anyway,
people,
so look
people,
for that.
People Don admires most.
we'll have Don back on once the book goes live. Once he does the crowdfunding, because that's an important part. He explained the dynamics of the entire process to me off the air, and it's pretty interesting. I think in terms of, I mean, crowdfunding/GoFundMe gets a bad name because a bunch of, you know, it can devolve quickly into a bunch of people begging for money. But this is not that. This is actually just pre-sales. It's what I think crowdfunding was designed for, basically handling the pre-sales for, you know, without having to get an influx of your own money. You can basically raise that money ahead of time and gauge potential interest when producing a product.
Gotcha.
And so he's doing it in the absolute right way. And so when that happens, I guess the deal is you get the book for cheaper than you would if you bought it retail. So I suggest jumping on it. And we'll keep you up to date with when that comes out.
Okay.
Challenge for next week. Adam, do you have something? I left it blank thinking I was going to write it in later, and I didn't.
No, I don't have anything. How about we went 85? How about we do something like super, super at the other end of the spectrum? Like
pick a number.
Let's go.
11. 11 and a half.
I don't have anything that wide.
No, me neither.
What's the widest lens that I have? 18 to 40 or whatever that one is. 17 to 40?
17.
Sure, let's do 17. Lucky number 17? Yeah.
Okay. That's good, because I was going to say something else. Then you have to guess, like, on the barrel markings, and you can't guess, like, 21. You know, that's hard to do.
Yeah.
So, 17.
Sure.
This is well thought out. That's the part I appreciate. Yeah. All right, 17 mils it is. Or is it just 17? Can I just take random pictures of 17-year-olds?
Sure you can. Or maybe you run into Ryan Kessler at the local pub.
I have his jersey.
Yeah, nice.
Well, no, it doesn't say Kessler on it. It just says 17.
Okay.
So, but people seem to recognize that.
Yeah, work it in. 17. It can be the lens, or it could just be any other random 17.
I'm probably gonna do the lens. In the spirit of the challenge, probably gonna be a 17 mil lens.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Monthly challenge reminder is Evening Sky. Hashtag that Two Hosers Monthly Challenge, or hashtag Hey Hosers on the Instagram, and we'll check that out, and Adam will make you wish you hadn't submitted.
Great.
Websites, Adam, where can people go to find your stuff?
AdamSchwartz.ca and your stuff?
You can find mine at AlanAtridge.com or the two of us at TwoHosers.com, where you can go to find all the links, photos. You can actually, speaking of that, you can comment on that site if you like, if you want to get us a message. Some people do it now and then. We don't announce it or advertise it every week, but you can do that. The one caveat being, I have it set to basically, the comments close after a certain number of days, meaning I think you're allowed, you can basically comment on the last two, maybe three episodes, and then it closes off. That is for spam reasons.
Gotcha.
Spam sucks and is rampant on there, but if I keep it locked off time-wise and everything's within a couple of weeks, it seems to do okay. So feel free to leave a comment there, and if it looks spammy, I'm just going to spamify it. And other than that, so that's at twohosers.com. Check that out. And until next week, get out there and make better photos.